Talk to me, Captain Huckabee.
Well, Agent Graham, we've taken control of the situation at the request of the Tarrant County Sheriff's Department and the Fort Worth Police Department, who share jurisdiction up here. We have Department of Public Safety SWAT teams and Texas Rangers surrounding the place. We have our hostage negotiators on hand, but so far those fellas in there aren't answering any of the phone lines we've tried.
Those bastards aren't interested in negotiating. It's not any compromising them.
Well, sir, I think they'll find there's not much backup in the Texas Rangers either.
Graham managed not to grin. This wasn't the time or place for it, but he knew exactly what Huckabee meant. Graham was a Fed, but he was Texas-born. To a man of Graham's character and background, that meant a lot. The two men were in the Rangers Mobile Command Center, a long black motorhome packed to the gills with high-tech equipment, and the men and women to operate it. A monitor next to where Graham and Huckabee were standing showed a frozen video image. It showed a gun-wielding terrorist standing behind a line of hostages on their knees, with their hands clasped behind their heads. Graham reached over and tapped the screen.
You know what this means, don't you, Captain?
They don't care if we identify them.
Exactly. They plan on dying. Doesn't matter what we do, they're not coming out peacefully.
Wastaki Huckabee's broad shoulders rose and fell in a shrug.
Yeah, then we might as well go in and root them out. Can't be more than a few dozen of them.
They'll start killing the hostages.
I'm gonna kill some of them anyway. Might as well minimize the casualties.
The look in the Ranger's eyes told Graham that Huckabee wasn't as resigned to those deaths as he was trying to sound. He just couldn't think of anything else. And a part of him was probably afraid the feds were going to waltz in here and take over. After all, the sack from the Dallas office of the FBI was already on the scene. Sure, so far all Graham had done was ask for a sit-rep, but how long could that last? The feds weren't known for their restraint.
What about the explosives at the entrances? Supposed to have motion detectors on them to trigger blasts if anybody comes too close.
The bomb squad guys think that might be a bluff. They've been studying the apparatus through binoculars, and they don't think the bombs are really that sophisticated.
Doesn't strike me as likely those men would be bluffing under these circumstances.
We can find out easy enough.
How?
Robot. Roll one of those little suckers right up to a bomb and see if it goes off.
And what happens to the hostages who are sitting nearby?
Won't be enough of them left to scrape up with a spoon. But we'd know whether the terrorists are bluffing or not.
I hope you're just speaking hypothetically, Captain.
Oh, for God's sake, you think I'd really blow up those folks? We're just brainstorming here, Agent Graham.
That's what I was hoping you'd say. Let's come up with something else.
Both men drew a blank, though, as they stood there amid the glow from a dozen monitors. One of the doors opened, letting in a slice of pale autumn sunlight, before it quickly closed again behind Agent Eileen Bastrop.
Anything new to report?
Negative, sir. Hasn't been another peep out of them, and they're staying away from the entrances. None of the snipers have been able to spot anybody except the hostages placed near the explosive devices.
What about around back?
We can't see through the service doors because they're solid, but heat sensors detect the presence of individuals behind each door. They probably have bombs with them, too. If we roll the doors up, the devices will detonate.
That's just a guess.
It was Bastrop's turn to shrug.
An educated one.
Damn it. Hostages probably outnumber their captors 50-1. Why don't they
overpower them? If the terrorists are all armed with automatic weapons, they might be able to kill a couple of hundred hostages before they went down. Nobody wants to be one of the unlucky ones who dies. Sooner or later, it may come to that, but right now, everybody's still hoping they'll get out of this alive somehow.
Graham looked over at Huckabee again.
Any chance of putting together a list of the people who were in there?
We're working on that already. All we have to go by, though, are citizens who call in and say their friends or loved ones plan to go to the Ultra Mega Mart today, and they want to know if they're all right. We're assuming the ones we can't locate are still in there.
The wheels of Graham's mind were still clicking over.
Carry permits?
We'll cross-reference the names on the list we come up with. There are bound to be some customers in there who are carrying handguns, but I imagine the terrorists are familiar with the laws here, and one of the first things they would have done was sweep for weapons and get everybody they could to give up their guns.
Maybe some people managed to hide their weapons. If they did.
If they did, then sooner or later, we're gonna have a gunfight in there.
Allison still couldn't believe this was happening to her. She wanted to be with her son. She wanted to go home. Burke must have felt the shudder that went through her. His arm tightened around her shoulders.
Don't worry. I'm sure it's just a matter of time until they get everything worked out and let us out of here.
Was he just trying to comfort her? Allison wondered. Or was he really that stupid? Those men were killers. They weren't going to let anybody go. She was never going to see Nate again. Tears began to roll down her face.
Go ahead and cry. I'm right here for you.
At least they were sitting on the floor now, instead of lying on it on their bellies. That was a little more comfortable. The terrorists forced men to work at gunpoint, clearing merchandise away in certain areas to create open spaces where large numbers of hostages could sit. She suspected there were at least a dozen of these enclaves in the store, with 90 to 100 hostages in each one. Terry McCabe sat on Allison's other side.
We should have jumped them when some of the men were already on their feet. Our chances would have been better that way.
Chances of what? Getting killed? The only smart thing to do is cooperate with them. They probably want to get out of here every bit as much as we do.
Allison doubted that. The man who was primarily responsible for guarding them didn't look like he cared one way or the other. His dark eyes burned with the fanaticism of a man to whom life and death was the same thing. He never put down either of the two machine pistols he carried. He looked like he would enjoy nothing better than to squeeze the triggers of both weapons and send leaden death spewing into the crowd of prisoners. A man sitting in the row behind them leaned forward to Terry.
Ma'am, you sound to me like you got the right idea. You reckon you could distract that fella?
Terry looked back over her shoulder. So did Allison.
Why?
Because I got a .38 I managed to hide on one of the shelves when they come around yelling for us to give up our guns. I got my hands on it again while we were moving stuff.
You've got it now?
Damn right. Pardon my French. If you can get that fella looking somewhere else, I think I can draw a bead on him and put him down.
Terry hesitated. Allison didn't know what she wanted the older woman to say. She hated their captors and wished all of them were dead. But if that hostage with the gun tried to shoot the man with the machine pistols and missed, there might be a bloodbath.
You'll probably just get one shot.
I know. I won't miss.
You're crazy! You're both crazy to even be thinking about such a thing. And you're gonna get us all killed.
You got a better idea, mister.
Yes. Cooperate. I'm sure the authorities are working on a solution to get us out of here right now.
Trust in the government, eh? If those old boys who were holed up in the Alamo last spring had done that, they'd all be dead now, wiped out by that rogue Mexican army general. The government can't help us. It's up to us to save our own lives.
I think you're right. He has two machine pistols. If we can get our hands on those, we can all scatter and hide. It's a big store. They can't track all of us down. Whoever gets the guns can put up a fight. Maybe take down some more of them. Get more guns.
Mom, you can't. You'll get killed.
Oh, I won't get hurt, honey. I'm just the distraction. I'll hit the floor before the shooting ever starts.
What about the rest of us? You're talking about throwing all our lives away, and by God, I won't let you do it.
What are you talking about?
Burke put a hand on the floor and levered himself out of his sitting position.
Hey! Hey, Omar, or whatever your name is! Get over here, I need to talk to you!
It was night now in Pakistan. Lawrence Fargo Ford was in the embassy's communications center, the most heavily shielded and most often swept room in the place. He was as certain as you ever could be it was secure from any electronics eavesdropping. He had been here all evening, in constant touch with CIA headquarters back in Langley, Virginia, getting reports on the bombings in Fort Worth and the situation at the Ultra Megamart. Ford remembered shopping in regular Megamarts the last time he was stateside, but he didn't recall any Ultra Megamarts. Must be a new thing. Sure enough, more intel kept coming in during the evening, indicating today was the store's grand opening. It was packed full of holiday shoppers when the goons came in and started shooting. So now the authorities in Texas had a full-blown hostage situation on their hands, with hundreds of hostages, maybe more. An ultra-mega-hostage situation, Ford caught himself thinking at one point.
Jeez.
It wasn't funny, of course, and he knew it. Lots of people were dead, including children. The terrorists aimed directly at America's heart and hit it. Ford's brief attempt at humor was just a case of trying to laugh instead of cry. The worst of it, there wasn't a damn thing Ford could do to help. All he could do was sit and monitor the situation 10 time zones away. To that end, he established a secure computer link with Langley and networked it so everything coming in from the field showed up here in Islamabad, too. Ford couldn't recall when he ate last, but he didn't care. He didn't feel the hunger. He sat there in front of a bank of computer screens and video monitors, coat and tie off, sleeves rolled up, his eyes behind the black-framed glasses always moving, flicking from report to report, from satellite feeds of U.S. network news broadcasts to intel from military and CIA surveillance satellites. The supercomputers at Langley were trawling through trillions and trillions of bytes from the web, searching for anything helpful to the people in Texas, trying to come up with a way to get those hostages out safely. A list of names scrolled by on one of the monitors. At the top of the screen, a line of type told Ford these people were employees of Megamart, scheduled to work today at the Ultra Megamart at the time of the attack. No telling if all of them were actually in there or not, but most probably were. The company must have got a massive info dump from Megamart's computers, because information on store inventory began to scroll past Ford's bleary eyes, along with a restocking list and a delivery schedule. Documents blinked into view for a second and then were gone. Ford reached up, about to take his glasses off and rub his eyes in weariness. He stopped short as a name on one of the documents jumped out at him. Then it was gone, and he couldn't call it back. The flood of info kept rolling along. Ford knew what he saw, though. He sat forward in his chair, pulled a keyboard over in front of him, and got an encrypted email ready to go through a seemingly endless series of secure servers to Langley. He had to confirm the information he glimpsed so briefly. Confirmation took another 25 minutes. Once he was sure, Ford waited impatiently while Langley patched through a secure connection to a certain Texas cell phone. Ford didn't know if this was going to do any good, but he figured if his hunch was right, the odds in favor of the hostages had just gone up a little.
Sporting goods.
Stackhouse's eyes lit up.
Oh, hell yeah. Plenty of guns and ammunition there.
Is there an access door, like the one in electronics?
Stackhouse frowned and thought.
It ain't like I know every inch of the store, but I remember signing off on the plans for this one, and I don't recall there being one.
Yeah, that'll make it a little harder, but not impossible. If we can take out the two terrorists back here in the stockroom, then all the rest of us can make a rush for sporting goods and arm ourselves before the rest of those bastards can cut us off. It's not that far.
Oh, sounds like you're coming up with a plan after all, McCabe. How are we going to get rid of those two fellas?
I'm still working on that.
Before he could think about anything else, McCabe felt a familiar vibration in his shirt pocket. His eyes widened in surprise. He forgot about his cell phone. Now it was about to ring.
What?
Hey, Jackknife, old buddy. Hope I didn't call it a bad time.
Fargo?
That's right, pal. Where are you?
I'm in a world of shit. I'm inside the Ultra Megamart here in Texas. Turn on your TV, I'm sure you'll see something about it.
Oh, I know what's going on. Don't worry about that. I assume since you answered your phone, you're not a prisoner. Our nasty friends would have taken it away already if you were.
That's right. Hey, Fargo, where are you?
Islamabad, Pakistan.
I know where Islamabad is. I was hoping you were somewhere closer. Like right outside the damn store.
No such luck. I wish I was too, so I could give you a hand.
Ford functioned as the CIA liaison on several missions McCabe and his team carried out in several different third world hotspots.
If you've been monitoring the U.S. news broadcasts, I'm sure you know more about what's going on here than I do.
You know about the bombings in Fort Worth?
Yeah.
Well, those were just to get our attention. You're right in the middle of the main part of the attack. It was planned and carried out by a sleeper cell of Hizb ut-Tahrir agents led by Sheikh Mushaf al-Mukhari.
McCabe recalled attending briefings on Hizb ut-Tahrir when he was still an operator. The group wasn't a major player back then. He didn't remember any mention of Mukhari, but he was sure the guy was your typical Islamo-fascist maniac.
Mukhari is on the scene leading the attack in person. He and his friend sent out a video of their demands via cell phone camera.
Wait, Mukhari told you who he was?
Yeah, and one of the guys with him showed his face, too.
McCabe closed his eyes for a second and rubbed his forehead. That bit of news was bad. Really bad.
All right, do you know how many of them are in here?
Best guess is around 24.
How are they armed?
Machine pistols are all we've seen, except for the bombs at each entrance to the store.
Bombs?
Yeah. They claim they're armed with motion sensors, so they'll detonate if anyone comes too close. And they have hostages sitting practically on top of them, too. There won't be any SWAT teams rushing the doors, Jackknife. Nobody wants footage of hostages blowing up on the 6 o'clock news tonight.
McCabe thought about Terry and Ronnie. It was possible they were some of the hostages placed near one of those bombs. He shoved the thoughts out of his head. He couldn't afford to dwell on the danger his wife and daughter might be in. Fear for them might paralyze him. He learned during many hazardous years to keep all his attention focused on whatever task lay in front of him next. Deal with one problem before worrying about the next one.
What do the terrorists want?
More than they'll ever get. All U.S. military off Muslim soil and all Western business interests in the Middle East turned over to the Caliphate. a new Islamic superstate they're trying to put together. It's impossible.
Yeah, even if it wasn't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. What they really want is to hurt us more than they already have.
Something else occurred to McCabe.
How did you know I would be mixed up in this?
Saw your name on some intel I was monitoring. Megamart let Langley into their computers, and I'm hooked into the network.
Why? Did the plan come out of your part of the world?
Yep. In fact, it was hatched at a Hizb ut-Tahrir training facility in the mountains along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. One of our guys led a raid on the place and discovered the intel. You probably remember him, Brad Parker.
McCabe remembered him all right. Parker was a good man. Bit of a cowboy sometimes, maybe, but still a good man.
Is he all right?
Bunged up some, but he'll be fine. What are you gonna do? You do have a plan, don't you?
Yeah, sort of. There's only two of the guys back here in the rear of the store. We're gonna try to take them out and free the prisoners in the stockroom, and then see if we can reach the sporting goods section.
Guns and ammo. Better be careful. The bastards are liable to have explosives strapped to their bodies.
Headshots. That'll solve the problem.
Yeah. Good luck, my friend.
Yeah, we'll need it.
Jack broke the connection between North Texas and Pakistan.
Who in blazes was there?
McCabe slipped the phone back into his pocket, after turning off the ringer completely.
An old friend, CIA. He found out I was in here and thought he ought to touch base with me, so he could pass along any intel we didn't already have.
He told Stackhouse about the bombs at the store entrances and the terrorists' demands. Stackhouse scrubbed a gnarled hand over his face.
Well, then we got our work cut out for us, and we ain't got a lot of time neither.
That's right. I'm going out there behind those shelves full of baby formula. Wait until I get in position and make some sort of racket. One of them's gonna come down here to investigate.
Then you'll jump him and get his gun?
No, yeah, that's the idea.
Hamed lifted both machine pistols as the infidel stood up and shouted at him. He came close to sending a burst from each weapon into the red-faced man's chest, but at the last second he held off. The man didn't seem to realize how close he just came to dying.
Yeah, I'm talking to you. You gotta listen to me.
The man started forward, stepping around some of the other hostages, as he ignored both blonde women, the older one and the younger, who reached out to stop him. Hamed thrust the guns at the man.
Do not move! Come any closer, and I will shoot!
The infidel stopped and raised both hands.
Take it easy, Omar. I'm just trying to keep everything peaceful here, okay?
My name is Hamed.
Sheikh al-Mukhari told all of them it didn't matter if the Americans found out who they were. Hamed understood the reasoning perfectly well.
Do not call me Omar again!
The American kept his hands up.
Sure, Hamed, whatever you say. All I wanted to tell you—
Burke, shut up!
Hamed swung his left-handed pistol toward the lean blonde, the older one.
Be quiet!
He looked at the red-faced infidel again.
What is it you wanted?
Mr. Burke, Ellis, please don't.
Now the infidel hesitated. Obviously the words of the younger woman meant more to him than those of the older one. That meant the woman herself was more important to him. Hamed knew what to do.
Back!
He gestured with the machine pistols.
Back, all of you!
The hostages began scooting backward on the floor.
Except you.
Hamed stepped forward quickly and trained the right-hand pistol on the young blonde woman.
Stay where you are!
She froze, her blue eyes widening.
Hey! There's no need for that, Hamed. We're cooperating here. I understand why you and your people are so angry with us. We've been jacking around with you for years, always taking a side of the Israelis, starting wars for oil.
Stop lying, American. I know you do not truly feel this way. Do you think I haven't been around the likes of you long enough to know when you are lying?
He looked back at the blonde.
On your feet.
There's no need for that, I tell you.
Burke moved as if he were going to try to get between Hamed and the woman.
I'm trying to make you understand.
Get back, damn you.
Hamed slashed at Burke's face with a left-hand gun. Burke fell back as the sight ripped a gash in his cheek. At that second, while Hamed's back was half-turned, one of the other men leapt to his feet. Hamed just caught a glimpse of the movement from the corner of his eye and started twisting in that direction. The sight of the gun in the man's hand jolted Hamed. He felt the impact on his upper left arm. He was already turning toward the man, and the bullet finished the job of jerking him around. His left arm and hand suddenly didn't want to work anymore, but his right functioned just fine. The burst of lead ripped into the man, stitching wounds across his body, driving him backward. He dropped his gun as he slid down a rack of picture frames. Not all the bullets found their intended target. A teenage boy sitting near the man jerked as a black hole appeared in the center of his forehead. He sat there for a second as blood trickled from the wound and formed a red trail down his face. Then he toppled over into the lap of the girl sitting next to him. Kamed's already taut nerves began to fray.
Make her be quiet, or I will kill her too!
Frozen with fear, the hostages didn't move fast enough. Kamed turned back to Burke, who started the whole thing. He gestured again to the young blonde woman.
You, on your feet. Stand next to him.
Allison climbed unsteadily to her feet and shuffled over until she was next to Burke, where Hamed could cut down both of them with ease if he needed to.
Now, tell me what you wanted to tell me, but no tricks. If you lie to me, I will kill you and the woman both.
Burke's face was still flushed, but a terrified pallor spread beneath the red. He looked at the bodies of the three people Hamed had just killed. Then he looked at the woman beside him for a second, before looking back at Hamed, who knew he would now tell the truth. The man was too frightened to even consider doing otherwise.
I just wanted to tell you, I'm a lawyer, an attorney at law. I was just going to say, I'm a lawyer, and I want to help you negotiate. I can help you.
Hamed couldn't believe the man's stupidity. Negotiate?
Shut up! Sit down!
The blonde woman was tugging on Burke's arm by now. He allowed her to lead him back to where they were sitting before, with the older blonde woman and the teenage girl. They sat down. Burke looked vague, confused, and ashamed of himself. More confused than anything else, though. Hamed could not believe how crazy some of these Americans were. Had the lawyer really believed he could, what was the expression? Negotiate the will of Allah? The distraction almost proved fatal. Hamed's arm throbbed where the other man's bullet struck. Was that Burke's aim all along? To distract Hamed so the other man could shoot him? Hamed's eyes narrowed as that thought occurred to him. He considered killing Burke, just on the off chance he was right about the lawyer, but he didn't think that was the case. Burke wasn't that smart. He probably didn't even know the other man had a gun.
Hamed!
Hamed looked around and saw Shalasahi hurrying toward him, trailed by Sheikh Al-Mukari. Both had worried looks on their faces.
We heard shooting. Are you all right?
Of course he's not all right. There's blood on his arm. Let me take a look at it.
Shala, trained as a nurse at the university in Arlington, was as close to a doctor as they had among them. Hamed gave Mukari his left-hand machine pistol, shook off his jacket sleeve, then Shala tore back the sleeve of his shirt to reveal a raw gash in his upper arm.
The bullet just creased you. I'll get a first aid kit from the sporting goods section and clean and bandage the wound.
No need to waste your time. Why bother to tend to a minor wound when they would all be perishing soon in the cleansing flame of nuclear fire? Shala blinked, then nodded in understanding.
It should be bound up anyway so that you can use the arm better.
Hamed considered the suggestion. In that case, go ahead.
I'll be right back.
She left toward the sporting goods section.
Hamed, what happened here?
Nothing important. One of the infidels had a gun.
Hamed nodded toward the three bodies.
You missed it when you disarmed them.
Mukhari looked like a professor chatting a wayward student.
A thousand pardons.
Seek not my pardon, but that of Allah.
Hamed bowed his head humbly. He thought the Sheikh was overreacting a bit, though. They were talking about only one gun and one American. How dangerous could that be? McCabe heard the shouts and the shooting from inside the store as he crouched behind the shelf full of cartons of baby food. A pang of worry throbbed through him. He couldn't help it. Terry and Ronnie were out there somewhere. He forced his mind back onto the task at hand. He looked at the door of the office, saw Hiram Stackhouse peering around the jam, and nodded to the elderly billionaire. Stackhouse returned the nod. He drew back his arm and flung a heavy stapler toward the rear of the stockroom. The stapler hit a shelf, then hit the floor, and bounced several more yards. McCabe thought the noise sounded like somebody ran into something and knocked it over. That was just about perfect. The racket was loud enough that the terrorists must have heard it, and they would have to investigate. One man would come down here to the other end of the stockroom, while the other remained where he was, guarding the hostages. That was the hope, anyway.
What was that?
I don't know. Maybe something fell off the shelf.
Perhaps. Better to check. I will go. You stay here with the thief.
Breathing shallowly, McCabe waited and listened for one of them to approach. Stackhouse withdrew back into the office. If the terrorist got past McCabe, Stackhouse would be waiting with his revolver. A shot would warn the other bastard, but at least the odds would be cut down a little. In the long run, though, killing one of the terrorists wouldn't do any good. The McCabe knew it. He had to get all of them before they could trigger any explosives they might have with them. That was a tall order. But like all journeys, it started with a single step, like the ones he heard just now. The man moving past the shelves where McCabe was hidden trained his machine pistol on the partially open office door, and his tense attitude told McCabe he was ready, even eager, to pull the trigger. McCabe held his belt, formed it into a loop in his left hand. His right held the pocket knife. Moving silently, he dropped the belt around the guy's neck and yanked him backward. At the same time, McCabe's right hand flashed up and then drove down. He kept the pocket knife's blade razor sharp, and it went into the back of the terrorist's neck without much trouble. McCabe put plenty of force behind the strike to make sure of that. The terrorist spasmed as McCabe felt the blade grate against bone. He hit the spine, just as he intended. It all happened so fast that the bastard didn't even have time to jerk the trigger on the machine pistol before his spinal cord was severed. The weapon slipped out of suddenly nerveless fingers and fell to the floor. McCabe pulled the knife out and reached around the terrorist's body. The guy was dead weight now, but he wasn't actually dead yet. That changed a second later when McCabe thrust the knife under his chin and into his throat, angling the blade up so it went through the soft tissue and into the base of the brain. The terrorist's body gave one more spasm as he died. McCabe lowered the corpse to the concrete. Killing the terrorist took approximately 3 seconds. McCabe checked under the guy's jacket for explosives. Finding none, he wiped the blood from the pocket knife onto the garment. Then he folded the knife's blade and put it away. He picked up the machine pistol and checked it. It was a Heckler & Koch model with which he was intimately familiar. The clip was full. McCabe looked in the pockets of the dead guy's jacket and found two more full clips. He stowed them in his own jacket. Stackhouse was looking around the door jamb again. McCabe smiled faintly and nodded to him. Stackhouse stood up and slipped out of the office and cat-footed over to join McCabe.
Now what?
Now we get the other guy.
Ahmed! Ahmed!
The second terrorist had quite a dilemma on his hands, McCabe thought, as he and Stackhouse worked their way silently along the narrow passage next to the wall.
Ahmed! What is going on down there?
So, the dead terrorist was named Ahmed. Enjoy your stay in hell, Ahmed. It's just what you deserve. Meanwhile, Ahmed's partner must be going nuts with worry. He couldn't leave the prisoners and come down here to see what happened to Ahmed. If he turned his back on the Megamart employees, they would either jump him or make a break for freedom. All he could do was get more and more nervous. What if he had a radio? Then he could call some of the other terrorists for help. That would ruin everything. McCabe needed to move a little quicker. He turned to Stackhouse.
Give me to the count of 30. Then squeeze through here and step out where that guy can see you.
Oh, you're putting a target on me, huh?
I'm gonna move fast enough he won't have a chance to do anything.
Yeah, well, you see that you do, son. I'm liable to dock your pay next month.
Just make sure it clears at the bank.
McCabe gave the old billionaire a nod. He slid along the wall, closer and closer to a large opening near the spot where the remaining terrorist was holding the hostages. The numbers were running in his head. He was counting them down as Stackhouse was counting them up. Just as McCabe reached zero...
Do not move, dog!
Stackhouse was in the open.
Get down, old...
McCabe came around a pile of antifreeze jugs and delivered a sidehand strike, smashing the man's throat, crushing his windpipe. As the man's eyes widened in shock and pain, McCabe hit him again. The force of the killing blow made the guy's arms and legs flail around like he was doing an old-fashioned jitterbug. A sharp stench suddenly filled the chilly air. The terrorist folded up to lie in a stinking heap on the floor. McCabe reached down and picked up the machine pistol the terrorist dropped. As he straightened, he smiled at the group of Megamart employees who were staring at him in a mixture of shock and disbelief, obviously struggling to comprehend what they just witnessed.
Y'all ready to go kick some terrorist ass?
Every sort of high-tech surveillance equipment available to the FBI and the Texas Rangers was pointed toward the Ultra Megamart. So when more shooting erupted inside the store, the people outside knew about it. They heard it on their super-sensitive sound pickups. They saw the bursts of heat imagery on the feed from the spy satellite in a geosynchronous orbit overhead. In the command trailer, Graham took his cell phone out of his pocket and opened it.
Graham.
A look of surprise appeared on his normally impassive face. A lot of things were going on today to give his self-control some trouble.
Madam President, this isn't a secure line.
Eileen Bastrop's perfectly plucked eyebrows rose in surprise.
Yes, ma'am. We're aware of it. We don't know what happened in there. Our best guess, but it's some sort of brief struggle between the terrorists and the hostage. Yes, ma'am. It appears to be over now. We don't know what it means, but... And at this point, I wouldn't want to speculate on...
He shook his head at Bastrop, who understood the gesture to mean that her boss damn sure wasn't about to tell the President of the United States that they thought some Americans might have just been killed in there. One of the techs swiveled away from his console and held out a headset toward Graham, who shook his head again and held up a finger to tell the man to wait. Whatever the guy had, it couldn't be as important as talking to the President.
Yes, ma'am. We're on top of it. Oh, we have our top hostage negotiator team in there, and as soon as the terrorist contacts... We'll attempt to establish some lines of communication. No. We won't do anything rash. You can count it. We want a peaceful solution to the crisis just as much as... Well, of course. We'll let you know right away if anything... Thank you, Madam President.
What did she want?
She saw the reports on TV about the most recent shooting inside, and she's worried this is going to end badly.
So am I. I think we should move this command center back another 100 yards or so.
If they've got a pocket nuke or something like that in there, another 100 yards won't make any difference, Eileen.
I know, but what about conventional explosives?
Too big and bulky. The terrorists couldn't have smuggled them into the store if they were posing as shoppers like they must have. It must take a truck bomb or something like that, and the whole parking lot has been swept. They're dealing with something small but nasty.
Sort of like the pres...
Graham held up a hand to forestall the rest of the comment.
Sir.
Graham looked around at the tech who tried to get his attention earlier.
What is it, son?
I've got radio contact here with someone at the American Embassy in Islamabad, Pakistan.
Pakistan?
Yes, sir. An undersecretary named Ford.
Graham didn't know the name, but he could think of only one reason a seemingly minor diplomat would be calling him from Pakistan on today of all days. He took the headset, settled it so the buds were in his ears, and moved the mic in front of his mouth.
Special Agent in Charge Graham here. Talk to me, Mr. Ford. I assume you really work for our friends at Langley rather than the State Department.
That's right, Agent Graham. My name is Lawrence Ford. It was one of my associates who discovered the terrorist plan aimed at the United States. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to deliver the information in time to prevent the attack.
Well, if you've called to apologize, I appreciate it, but I'm a little busy right now.
No. The reason I called is to pass along some more intel that might prove useful to you. You have an asset inside the Ultra Mega March you probably don't know about.
Graham cocked an eyebrow at a clearly puzzled Bastrop.
Oh? What might that be?
A man. He used to work with me. His call sign is Jackknife.
Ellis Burke started shaking a few minutes after the shooting in which the man with the .38, the boy and the girl, were killed. Terry wasn't surprised. She saw delayed reactions like that hit people before, when they were involved in sudden, unexpected violence. Of course, in this case, the violence wasn't all that unexpected. After all, they were dealing with lunatics. But Burke looked surprised when the terrorist named Hamed killed 3 people so brutally, with no sign of remorse. As hard as it was for Terry to believe, the lawyer seemed genuinely shocked anyone would do such a thing. She would be willing to bet Burke's parents were anti-war protesters during the 60s. The apple, as the old saying goes, doesn't fall far from the tree. At least Burke had sense enough to fall back on his ambulance-chasing shyster persona and not tell Hamed the truth about why he got to his feet. If the terrorist knew the hostages were plotting against him, he might kill more as an object lesson. Burke sat with his head down, seeming to stare at his hands, held in his lap. His hands were trembling. Terry saw that he was about to lose it. She put a hand on Burke's arm.
Take it easy. It's all over now.
It's not. It's not over. He killed those people.
That's what he does. He's a terrorist. He killed a man earlier. Didn't that tell you what sort of monster he is?
It's different. I saw his eyes. He was thinking about killing Allison and me. All he had to do was squeeze the trigger, and he came so close, so close.
Listen to me. You're alive. Allison's alive. We can't give up hope. You know the sort of people we're dealing with now. You won't make the same mistake. They're the enemy, Mr. Burke. They want us dead, all of us. You can't reason with them.
Burke's gaze was bleak as he raised his head.
But if we can't reason with them, how can we hope to get out of here alive?
She knew he wouldn't want to hear the real answer. Kill them before they can kill us.
You just said it. We can hope.
There were 14 guys held prisoner in the stockroom by the two, now dead, terrorists. The dock foreman McCabe spoke with earlier, when he arrived with his truck, was dead too. His throat cut, just as McCabe supposed. The remaining 13 men were alive and healthy, though. McCabe stopped them from stampeding toward the service doors at the rear of the stockroom. He spotted small backpacks sitting in front of each of the large roll-up doors, and knew from his conversation with Fargo Ford, those were probably bombs, equipped with motion-sensitive detonators. McCabe explained quickly to the men that they couldn't take a chance on setting them off. There was no way out, except through the store. Counting himself in Stackhouse, McCabe had 16 men to deal with the terrorists. The odds were almost even, but for the fact that the terrorists were heavily armed, McCabe intended to do something about that.
We're going to try and make it to Sporting Goods. There's rifles and shotguns there, along with ammunition. No, stay away from the shotguns, though. With so many hostages around, we don't want buckshot spread and taking out innocent people.
How are we going to get from here to there without some of those bastards spotting us?
I don't know. I don't know yet. That's why I'm going to have a look around first and see if I can get the enemy located, especially the ones right in this part of the store.
You know, they're liable to be spread out all over the place.
Yeah, and that's going to work against them. They took too many hostages. All they were thinking about was the maximum number of people they could kill. They didn't stop to consider they have to watch all those prisoners. There's too many of them to pack them into a compact area.
You sound like you know something about things like this.
Yeah, a little.
No need to be modest, son. Boys, McCabe here used to be Special Forces. He fought them terrorist sons of bitches before on their home ground.
That revelation made the men look at him a little differently. McCabe didn't care about that, except that knowing his background might make them more likely to follow his orders quickly and without question.
All right. Now we can't afford to waste any time. Some of the others may come back here to check in with these two. Lay low here while I have a look around. And if any of them come back in here, try to stay out of sight. And if you can't, use that machine pistol and kill the bastards.
Damn right.
McCabe went to the double swinging doors and crouched below the level of the plexiglass windows. He angled to the side so he could take a quick look through one of the windows. His line of sight ran up an aisle between the shoe department on his left and something else on his right. Crafts, maybe? He wasn't sure. He didn't know the layout of the store, although Stackhouse gave him a quick verbal sketch from memory. He was sure, though, that Sporting Goods was to his right as well, past several other sections. From where he was, McCabe couldn't see all the way to the front of the store. Shelves full of merchandise cut off that view. But in the area he could see, no one was moving. He eased one of the swinging doors open about 6 inches and listened intently. He pushed the door open some more and stepped out of the stockroom into the main part of the store. He gazed left and right along the wall dividing the stockroom from the rest of the store. A narrow aisle ran along that wall, at the back of the shoe section to his left, and crafts, he'd been right about that, to his right. Again, he saw no movement. The terrorists must have herded the hostages into groups in central locations, probably in the main aisles of the store. They would have swept their areas already to round up any stragglers. They probably thought they had everyone under their guns. Making no noise, even in his thick-soled work boots, McCabe started to his right in a crouching, gliding pace, machine pistol held ready in his hand. He moved past the crafts section into bedding, sheets, pillowcases, blankets, and comforters, then a stretch of plastic garbage cans, laundry baskets, ironing boards, plastic storage tubs, and the like. McCabe cat-footed past them, and found himself at the rear of several aisles full of camping equipment. He had reached the edge of the sporting goods section. He looked ahead of him, past the fishing gear, and saw the gleam of glass-fronted cabinets with rifles in them. That was when the realization hit him. Those cabinets were locked up. The ammunition, too. Employees who worked in this area would have the keys, but those employees were taken hostage and rounded up. McCabe could break the glass and get to the guns that way, but the noise was bound to draw the attention of the terrorists. He was pondering what to do when a woman came around a display of exercise equipment a few feet away, started toward him, then stopped short at the sight of him. Her eyes widened in shock, her mouth opened to shout an alarm, and she jerked her hand up to thrust the machine pistol in it at McCabe. McCabe was moving before the woman was. His senses were keenly alert, his muscles taut and ready for action. As the woman's gun came level, McCabe reached her and clamped his left hand around the weapon, pinning the slide so that it couldn't fire. At the same time, he drove his right fist into her jaw. He was holding the machine pistol he took from one of the dead terrorists in the stockroom, making the punch that much more potent. The woman's knees buckled, her eyes rolled up in their sockets, and McCabe knew she was out cold. He got his right arm around her and kept her from collapsing to the floor. She let go of the machine pistol, so McCabe had no trouble taking it from her hand. He headed quickly for the counter in front of the gun cabinets, half dragging, half carrying the unconscious female terrorist. No question she was one of them. She wore jeans and the same sort of thick jacket as the others. Plus, her long, raven-black hair and olive skin testified to her Middle Eastern heritage. Of course, she could have been Italian or something like that, McCabe supposed, but the gun was a dead giveaway, and so was the fact that her first instinct was to try to shoot him. Once they were behind the counter, where they wouldn't be easily spotted, McCabe lowered her to the floor. Her eyelids were already fluttering. He knew she wouldn't be unconscious for very long. The smart thing to do would be to cut her throat while he had the chance. But McCabe wasn't made that way. He unbuckled her belt and pulled it out of the loops on her jeans, then used it to tie her wrists together. He pulled her knees up and lashed her ankles to her wrists, being none too gentle about it and not worrying about how uncomfortable she might be. McCabe lifted her jacket, pulled her shirt loose from the jeans, and used his pocket knife to cut a strip from the bottom of it. Then he cut off another piece of material from the shirt, wadded it up, and jammed it into her mouth, tying it in place with a strip of cloth. His movements were swift and efficient. He had her hogtied and gagged in less than a minute. She started trying to thrash around, but McCabe put the barrel of a machine pistol against the back of her head. She must have recognized the feel of it, because she got still in a hurry. That wouldn't last long, though, and McCabe knew it. She would figure out he couldn't afford to shoot her, so he let her see the razor-sharp blade of the pocket knife. He held the index finger of his other hand to his lips. She lay still. He saw in her eyes the realization he would kill her if he had to, and she must have figured out by now he could do it quietly, too. McCabe leaned over and put his mouth close to one of her ears.
Here's the deal. You're coming with me, and you're not going to struggle. If you do, I'm just going to knock you out again. I can do it with one little pinch here.
He rested his fingers on her neck, at the spot where several vital nerves joined.
So cooperate with me, and maybe you'll get your chance for Armageddon later.
Wrong word, he thought. Armageddon was a Jewish thing. Jihad was probably closer. But he didn't waste time correcting himself. Instead, he picked her up and draped her over his shoulder, aware as he did so, she was heavier than she looked. She cooperated. There wasn't much else she could do. McCabe got the feeling she wasn't highly trained in hand-to-hand combat or self-defense. Probably didn't figure on needing any of that stuff. He retraced his steps to the swinging doors leading to the stockroom, again without seeing anyone else along the way, and passed through. Hamed knew something was wrong when he saw the worried look on Sheikh al-Mukhari's face.
Have you seen Shala?
Not since she left to get bandages.
Perhaps we should have had radios of some sort. I did not really think about how large this place is.
There are probably walkie-talkies in the electronics area.
An excellent idea. But it does not tell me what happened to Shala.
I'm sure she's around somewhere. Would you like for me to go and look for her? You could watch these infidels while I do.
The Sheikh looked slightly offended. Hamed would suggest he lower himself to something as menial as guarding prisoners, and Hamed quickly backtracked from the idea, hoping as he did so, Allah would forgive him for speaking so to a holy man.
I will find her. Continue to keep your eye on these godless ones.
Of course.
Hamed turned his attention back to the prisoners as the Sheikh stalked off. Hamed wanted to keep them cowed and demoralized, because they weren't as much of a threat that way. That older blonde woman was watching him with keen interest, though, and Hamed didn't care for the look in her eyes. But then, she was just a stupid American bitch. She could do nothing.
Something's wrong. They're upset about something. The older man was asking Hamed if he'd seen a woman named Shala or something like that.
So one of them has gone missing. What does that mean? And what good does it do for us?
Terry tried to guard against the hope growing inside her.
It means something has happened to the woman. Maybe they didn't capture everyone in the store. Maybe some people are still free, and they grabbed the woman.
If that's true, they could use her as a hostage to make the others release us.
Never happened. I know about trade-offs.
You gotta have something the other guy really wants. These people all want to die. They won't care about one woman, even if she's one of them.
Terry knew the lawyer was right, but she still dared to hope. She hoped that the woman's disappearance meant that Jack was somewhere in the store, loose and working to free the hostages. She clung to that hope. For the first time since this nightmare began, she began to feel there was a chance that she, her daughter, and the rest of the prisoners might get out of here alive.